Hello, this is Dr. David Friedman, host of To Your Good Health Radio. According to the Centers for Disease Control, over 100 million Americans have diabetes or pre-diabetes, and that's not including those that go undiagnosed. Once considered an incurable disease, current research shows diet may play a key role in reversing diabetes. At the forefront of this research is Dr. Neil Barnard. Could the secret of preventing and reversing diabetes be found in the produce section of the grocery store? Stay tuned. Dr. Barnard will be sharing the sweet truth about diabetes, and it all starts now.
It's To Your Good Health Radio with number one best-selling author and renowned wellness expert, Dr. David Friedman, changing lives just for the health of it.
Our next guest is a fellow of the American College of Cardiology and is an adjunct professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences. He's the founder and president of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. He's authored more than 70 scientific publications as well as 19 books, including the bestsellers Power Foods for the Brain, 21-Day Weight Loss Kickstart, and Dr. Neil Barnard's Program for Reversing Diabetes. He's a sought-after lecturer and has starred in four PBS specials about diet and health. His latest book is called Dr. Neil Barnard's Cookbook for Reversing Diabetes. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Barnard.
Thank you. It's great to be with you today.
Oh, always a pleasure having you with us. Now, before we delve into how diet plays a key role in reversing diabetes, share with the listeners first the difference between type 1, type 2 diabetes, and pre-diabetes.
You bet. What they all have in common is that there's too much sugar in the blood, and the sugar we're talking about is glucose. Now, glucose is actually a good thing. It's what powers the cells of your body in the same way that gasoline powers your car. So glucose powers your brain, it powers your muscles, everything. But the problem in diabetes is that glucose, that sugar, it's not getting into the cells where it can work. It's staying outside in the blood. And in type 1 diabetes, the problem is that the insulin, which is a hormone that acts like a key to let the glucose get inside the cells, that insulin is just gone. It's not in the body anymore. And the reason is that the cells from the pancreas that make insulin have all been killed off. That's type 1. Now, much more common is type 2. And there's still insulin in the blood, but the cells are not responding to it normally. That's called insulin resistance. And then there's another kind, which is called gestational diabetes. That's a woman's pregnant. She's got diabetes. It's very much like type 2. And in fact, a woman who gets gestational diabetes, really, this is kind of a warning that she might end up with type 2 after a while. The good news is that there's a lot we can do about all of these.
Right.
And type 2 diabetes nowadays we know can actually be reversed for many people.
Right. And when did you actually discover how diet plays such a vital role in combating diabetes?
Well, it was in the late 1990s that we started doing research studies along these lines. And in 2003, NIH funded us to do a head-to-head test of a plant-based diet and the best conventional diet. And I have to tell you, the plant-based diet really just won hands down. It was really quite dramatic.
Right. Great. You know, I know for decades we've been told diabetes is caused from eating too much sugar, like candy, soda, ice cream, and fruit was included. And there's been a new shift in the scientific literature showing that fat buildup could be to blame. Share with us how this shift has changed the way we look at diabetes.
Yeah. You know, well, it really fits what we see when we compare different countries. Japan, traditionally, as long as the diet was a rice-based diet, there wasn't much diabetes. Now, if carbohydrate caused diabetes, then Japan should have had a lot of it because they were eating rice. They were eating noodles, but they had very little diabetes. And they didn't get a diabetes epidemic until the fast food chains all invaded. So when meat and cheese came in, they started to get diabetes. So the whole idea that carbohydrate or sugar was the problem, that never really had very much evidence behind it. But what really steeled it was, first of all, our own work, showing that when people get the fatty foods out of their diet and get the animal products out of their diet, they do dramatically better. But also at Yale University, Jerry Shulman and Kit Peterson and their research team have looked into the cells of the body with special scanning techniques, and they've been able to show that there's a buildup of fat in the muscle and the liver cells, and that triggers this insulin resistance process.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. Now, the consensus I know in the medical world is once you develop diabetes, you're going to have it, and you're going to need to take medication the rest of your life. I'm curious, what percentage of those with type 2 diabetes could normalize their blood sugar levels simply by changing the way they're eating?
Well, I think everybody can improve, and whether you're going to get normal or not, I think it really depends on how much of a diet change you make and how soon you get to the person. If you are diagnosed today and you make a diet change now, your ability to make that disease go away is pretty strong. If, on the other hand, that you've had that disease for 20, 25 years, your pancreas is getting beat up. It's had to produce extra insulin all these years. It's flagging in its efficacy at doing that. And so that means that you may not be able to get rid of the disease. That said, you can still improve. You can reduce the amount of medications you need, and most importantly, you can reduce the likelihood of any kind of complication.
Plus, they'll lose weight if they get in a healthier diet, and that helps, right? Isn't weight contributed to also to diabetes?
No question about it. Cholesterols also fall, blood pressures fall, everything gets better.
That's great. I'm curious, and I was going to ask you this, what's your opinion on fruit? I'm interviewing so many experts on the show, and they're saying get off all fruit because it contains fructose, which causes blood sugar to spike, increases inflammation in the body. What's your take on fruit? Do we get off all fruit, or are you a pro-fruit?
I think you should go to the store and get the healthiest fruit you can, get enough for yourself, and get enough to share. And put it on your desk so that when your employees come in, you'll have fruit to give them. This idea that fruit is the enemy is really just nuts. Let's look at the big picture. We like to pretend that we are carnivores, like a dog or a cat. We are not. We are great apes, like chimpanzees and orangutans and gorillas and bonobos. That's our biological class. They are fruit eaters. They eat a lot of it. Now, that said, once a person has type 2 diabetes, just about anything that they eat that has sugar in it will make their blood sugar go up. That's because their cells are filled with fat, and whatever sugar they eat is having trouble getting into their cells. But you still want to follow a diet that has no animal products in it, that keeps oils low, and has abundant fruits and grains and beans and vegetables. And as the fat particles gradually dissipate from your cells, your blood sugar will come down. If a person avoids fruit and avoids grains and avoids beans and things like that, as some people with diabetes do because they're afraid of sugar or carbs, those people are never going to get rid of their disease. They have the worst long-term prognosis.
Got it. So fruits are thumbs up. Good. I'm on the belief of that, too. It's like, wait a minute. All fruits are bad. They're beautiful. Their hands are designed for picking fruits. It made no sense. It goes against really history, in my opinion.
Right.
So that's great.
Yeah,
when looking, when you do go to the produce section and you're there, are there certain fruits and vegetables that we should and some maybe we should be avoiding? Are some better than others?
Great question. I think they do vary. The old wisdom was that certain fruits would raise the blood sugar more steeply. Watermelon, for example, could do it, or pineapple. However, I think people are rethinking that because these foods are so watery that the sugar that's in them is pretty well diluted. And really not much of an issue. That said, when I go shopping, I think it makes sense for people to shop for color. So let's say you go to the produce aisle and you see those beautiful orange sweet potatoes. Orange foods are not just healthy, but they have antioxidants, beta carotene. That's what makes them orange.
Right.
Combine them with greens, green leafy vegetables, loaded with calcium and other minerals. If we eat for color and let that be a guide, we're going to find some very, very helpful choices.
So eat the rainbow, right? And that doesn't mean Skittles.
Yeah,
that doesn't
rainbow.
Mean Skittles.
Right.
You know, I bet, I'm curious, do you hear a lot of testimonials from people who've changed their diet after reading your book, and then they actually have to educate their doctors who are awestruck by the results they see?
I hope that they're charging the doctor for that a little bit. it's the best medical education they ever got. No, that happens all the time. I'll tell you a funny email that I got from a man. He was living in England. He had diabetes. He went to see the doctor, and he was in pretty bad shape, really. Right after that, he heard about this book that I wrote called Dr. Neil Barnard's Program for Reversing Diabetes. He picked up the book. He read it. A few months later, he went back to the doctor. The doctor drew some blood tests from him, and the doctor was impressed. He'd lost weight and whatnot. The guy gets home. The phone rings, and it's his doctor saying, "You have to come back right away. We have looked at your blood test. I must speak to you." He gets in the car. He races to the doctor's office. He's trying to think, what did they find? What have I got in my blood? Am I dying? What is it? And the doctor sits him down and says, "Tell me exactly what you've been doing." And he says, "Well, I went vegan. You know, I followed this book, you know, this advice." And the doctor says to him, well, you are now officially healthier than I am, and I don't even have diabetes. So wow. The doctor had never heard that this approach could work so effectively and was stunned. We hear that all the time.
Wow. You know, I know we mentioned fruits. I have to touch on, you mentioned it briefly, but the big one is grains. I know we used to be healthy and lowered blood sugar. That's what we were told. And now experts are saying, stay off grains because they spike our blood sugar. Are you anti-grain or do you believe they still have a healthy place in the diet?
It's not a question of what I believe. This is not a political battle or a religious battle. Grains are healthful foods, period. That's it. There are some people who have an agenda where they want to be against these healthful foods. But if you look at the populations with the least diabetes, they are the ones that have plant-based diets. Now, they may be entirely vegan, like some people in Loma Linda, California, where their Adventist tradition guides them in that direction, or they may be predominantly plant-based, like in Okinawa, or in other parts of Japan, or in other countries. But grains are a foundation of those diets, beans, vegetables, fruits also. So it's not a question of belief or anything else. There's no debate. I know there are people who have contrary viewpoints. There are people who are contrary on lots of things. Scientific evidence does not bear that approach out.
Yeah, and scientific evidence pretty much debunks that our cavemen didn't eat gluten and grain because they found it in their teeth 3.5 million years ago. So we've been developing the ability to digest grains for millions of years, not 10,000, like they leave us to believe. So you, like you said, you can't defute science. You know, if you got to look at our ancestors as what we should eat, they ate grain. So
yeah.
Include
now,
them.
Now, when we talk about science, we do this in layers. The science often begins with observations. Where, say, in Japan, people tended to be thin traditionally. And then when people then would compare, say, Japan to the United States or Canada, they found it quite remarkable that in Japan they had relatively little diabetes. But it wasn't just Japan. It was many, many countries where the diet was predominantly plant-based. And then they would look at changes over time. When McDonald's came into Japan, or same thing in China, when the diet changes, what happens? And diabetes, of course, comes roaring in when cheese and meat come in. And then you say, all right, these are observational studies. Let me do a clinical trial where I take a person who never thought about doing a vegan diet and let's start it and see what happens and have a control group where maybe they don't make diet changes or don't make the same one. And we have done many, many of these. And you see the power of a plant-based diet. And then you can combine the results in what's called a systematic review or meta-analysis, where you take every study ever done on a certain topic and you just see how the results fit together. And it is it's just overwhelming. Every study ever done on plant-based diets shows that people lose weight.
There's no such study where people eat steak 3 times a day and get healthy.
Well, you know, you can lose weight by going on a low carbohydrate diet. It's not a healthy way to do it, but if you limit the amount of food that you're eating overall, and you throw out all the carbohydrates and all you're left with is smaller amounts of meat and so forth, those aren't healthy foods, but if your calorie content falls, you'll lose weight. But I would never suggest that a person do that because the foods that you're left with are the ones that are least healthy. And when you follow people who do high protein, low carb diets over the long term, their mortality is higher compared to others. Many of them do very, very poorly. So not to say that some people aren't eating too much junk and sugar, and to the extent that they get rid of that, that's good. But you want to have a diet that's plant-based, grains, beans, vegetables, and fruits. I should also say, you want to ensure complete nutrition. So I encourage people to have a B12 supplement. I think it's a good idea.
Right.
Sunlight will give you all the vitamin D you need. But if you're never getting any sunlight, then you need vitamin D from a supplement pill because you're not getting it from the natural source. But that's kind of about it. And there you are.
Yeah, let's talk about milk. I know it's been touted as giving us calcium for strong bones and the protein for strong muscles, but dairy has been linked to many diseases, including diabetes. Share how milk does a body bad.
Yeah, first of all, I should mention that milk doesn't have to be the source of calcium that we choose. Cows don't actually make calcium at all. The calcium is an element in the earth, and so calcium from the ground will get into the roots of plants like grass. And so when a cow eats grass, the cow eats some calcium, and then it ends up in the cow's milk. So if a person drinks milk for calcium, the cow never made it. The cow just ate it, and some of it's in the milk. And you absorb roughly 30% of that from the milk. If instead you consume green vegetables directly, hopefully, hopefully not grass, but broccoli or kale or Brussels sprouts or collards or whatever, the calcium from the ground got in those plants, and now you're eating it. And the absorption is higher for most of the green plants, with a couple of exceptions, but for the most part, it's higher. And then you're free of the problems that dairy will bring. Dairy products are the highest source of saturated fat. That's the cholesterol-raising fat that's also linked to Alzheimer's disease. Many people are quite sensitive to the proteins that are in dairy, where they'll get inflammatory conditions related to it. And, of course, some people have trouble with the dairy sugar, which is lactose, which causes digestive upset for a lot of people. So getting away from dairy is a good idea. You do need mom's breast milk when you're a little baby, hopefully. But apart from your own mother's milk, there's no real reason to have any kind of milk in your diet.
It's funny. I posted the benefits of wheatgrass on social media, and all these people said, yuck, yuck, you know, just eat grass-fed beef. I said, no, why would you want to eat grass-fed beef? You're bragging about how great grass is. Just go to the source. Cut out the middleman. You know, when most people, I want to get to your cookbook, because I know with diabetic, pretty much when you hear about a cookbook, you think it's going to be void of options of flavor and appeal. But your latest cookbook, it offers 150 delicious plant-based options ranging from dips and spreads, onion rings, pancakes with orange berry syrup, cinnamon bun oatmeal, and lemon pineapple muffins. I'm hungry just reading those. And, you know, you've clearly debunked the belief that you have to eat like a rabbit if you want to follow a plant-based diet.
This was a fun cookbook to write, and it's called Dr. Neil Barnard's Cookbook for Reversing Diabetes, because it's a companion to Dr. Neil Barnard's program for reversing diabetes.
Right.
The program book came out first in 2007, and I just did a complete revision of it. So the new program book is out, and the cookbook went along with it, and they just did such a pretty job with it. And I want to tip my hat to Drina Burton. Drina is a real genius in the kitchen. She is in Vancouver, and she came up with some of the most delectable recipes. And they're everything, you know, from breakfast and lunches and dinners and snacks and desserts and everything you could ever want. My hope is that people who have diabetes and have been thinking of this as a thankless condition, where you got to count calories and count carbohydrate grams and track all these things and be hungry because you're trying to, you know, lose weight, will see that healthy foods that are really delicious can really power your weight loss and help you to recover your health.
Yeah, and I purposely wanted to mention when I was reading some of the recipes is the sweet recipes you have. You know, people say stay away from all sweets, and I don't think God made a mistake when he created our tongue. We have taste buds for sweet. I don't think we should avoid sweets, just the right kind. So when people hear that, they go, is that a diabetic book? Not what he just mentioned, but share with us the sweeteners. Is there a specific one that's pro-diabetic that you like?
Well, there's all kinds of ways of doing this. For example, in my book, I have a chocolate cake, and I've got a chocolate frosting, and the sweetener that we've used in this particular case, in the frosting, there is cocoa powder in it, but we've used some dates, and the dates have a really nice sweetness, and we threw in a little bit of rice syrup or some coconut nectar if you want to use that. I will also make you a chocolate-baked banana, and it's a really, really fun kind of dessert that kids like, but adults like it too. It's sweet tasting, but it's delicious and it's nice. So in many of these cases, we're taking advantage of natural fruit sugars, things that nature had in mind. You're not going to see high fructose corn syrup or sucrose and whatnot in this book, but you will see lots of things that will replace the desserts the person is having now. You know, don't get me wrong. We want to make good choices, but Drina and I sat down and talked about the way we wanted to make this work. And every single thing in the book is free of animal products. It's free of added oils. These are really healthy ingredients. And I have to say the result was really fun.
That's great. Do you, for somebody who's like an avid hamburger or steak eater, says, look, they've convinced me this segment, is just it resonated, and they get this cookbook. Will they see things that will kind of baby step them? Like, do you have a veggie burger they can replace for their hamburger and so forth?
Yeah, sure. Exactly. And there are many. Yeah, we also have all the sides that a person can have. And different people are from different traditions. For me, I grew up in North Dakota, so that's a certain way of eating. It was roast beef, baked potatoes, and corn, like every day. Some other people come from a Latin American tradition, a European tradition, an African tradition, an Asian tradition. So what we wanted to do was to have foods that would sort of appeal to a broad range of people, although most of the readers are going to be vegetarian are going to be Americans who are for whom a vegetarian diet is kind of a new idea for them. Right. So yeah, we do have we have burgers in here, a couple of different ones, and we have a barbecue burger as well. I got maybe three or four different burgers, plus all the sides, so they'll feel comfortable with it. And what I would encourage a person to do, if you're listening to this broadcast and you're thinking, I want to try it, but I'm nervous, break it into two steps, and I want you to give this 1 month. The first week of the month, don't take anything out of your diet at all. You're not giving anything up whatsoever. But take a look at this book or just anywhere you can identify foods that have no animal products in them that you might like. Okay, I never put almond milk on my cereal before. I don't know if it would be any good. Go to the store and try it. I never had a bean chili. I want you to try it. Dr. Barnard's talking about a veggie burger from his book. Fine, try it. Take a week and try different breakfasts, lunches, and dinners and write down the ones you like. Then you've got 3 weeks left. For those 3 weeks, I want you to eat the foods that you've identified that you like and not have any animal products at all for those 3 weeks. At the end of that time, two things are going to happen. Physically, you are healthier. But by that, I mean your blood sugar is down, your weight's down, you're feeling better. But the other thing is your tastes are changing. You think, I like this. I like that. I like this dessert. I like this main dish. I like this breakfast. And now you're thinking, this is easy. I've jumped in. I got used to the water. I really like it. I want to stick with it.
Yeah, that's great. I know when I stopped eating red meat 28 years ago, I started grilling out portobello mushrooms. You could marinate them. You cook them on the grill. And the consistency was very similar to steak. So it was kind of my little gateway into that transition. So that's something that, portobello mushrooms, don't they make great substitutes?
Yeah, they sure do. And there are many, many others. And everyone finds their own way in. So I encourage people to give it a try and just see what works for them. We've done this with thousands of people here in our research study, in our research laboratory. We do studies where people come in and they've got diabetes or they got weight problems or sometimes things more serious. We help them to change their diets. We guide them. And what we find is that very rapidly people discover it's easier than they thought it would be. There was a man who was a policeman here in Washington. His father was dead by age 30. He was 31 when he was diagnosed with diabetes, came in to us several years later. Over a year's time, he lost 60 pounds. His diabetes totally disappeared. He was off his diabetes medication. He could go in any clinic in the world, and they would not diagnose him as ever having had diabetes. His erectile dysfunction went away. I remember him telling me that. And we see so many people like that. And for every person that we see where their diabetes goes away, there's somebody else who hasn't heard about this approach and is thinking, well, I've got to just take medicine for the rest of my life. I can never get better. And I just want to ask those people, give yourself a shot. Give yourself a chance to see how good you can feel. You may not get off your medication. You may. Let's give it a chance and see how things go.
I think you had a lot of the men when you said the word erectile dysfunction improvement. I think that's going to sway them over to the diet right. What did he say? I had no idea that helped.
I hope so. A man who goes into the doctor and says, I'm having a little trouble with my nature. You know what he means? He's having impotence. If the doctor just writes out a Viagra prescription and hands it to him and says, good luck, buddy, that doctor's making a terrible mistake. And the reason is that erectile dysfunction doesn't come from performance anxiety. It comes from narrowed arteries. The guy has narrowed arteries going to his private parts. He's not getting enough blood flow to his private parts. And the male sexual anatomy is this hydraulic system, obviously devised on a Monday because things are always going wrong with it. But if you don't have blood flow, it doesn't work. If he's got narrowed arteries down there, he's got narrowed arteries to his brain.
True.
He's got narrowed arteries to his heart. He's set up for a stroke or set up for a heart attack. And if all you do is you give him a little blue pill, you're ignoring the fact that this guy's at risk. What the doctor needs to do is to say, yeah, I can give you a pill, but let's talk about the bigger picture, which you've got a total body atherosclerotic process going on that we can address. Let's get the cholesterol and animal fat out of your diet. And as you lose weight and your diabetes goes away and your blood pressure comes down and you get off your medications and your sexual function comes back on its own, then this whole idea of taking a pill for it, just, you found something much more powerful.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Thanks so much for being with us today. It's always a pleasure having you on the show. And to get your copy of Dr. Neil Bernard's cookbook for reversing diabetes, you can go to PCRM.org. That stands for Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. And while you're there, be sure to check out Dr. Bernard's articles and extensive media library. You can follow him on Facebook at Neil Bernard MD and on Twitter at Dr. Neil Bernard. And for my daily posts and tweets, follow me at Dr. David Friedman. On Instagram, I'm at Health Radio Doc. If you heard Dr. Bernard share something today and you said, man, somebody needs to hear this, somebody I know, send them a link to this podcast. It's available to yougoodhealthradio.com. And be sure to check out our podcast library and share segments with friends, family, coworkers, and on social media. This information is too important to keep to yourself. You can also subscribe to future podcasts on iHeartRadio and iTunes. More to come. Stay tuned and stay well.